The reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 32, Entanglement in Fruitive Activities, Number 3 this morning.
Yeah.
But to the demigods and forefathers.
To the demigods and forefathers.
Shantaya.
Shantaya.
With reverence.
With reverence.
Akranta.
Akranta.
Overcome.
Overcome.
Mati.
Mati.
His mind.
His mind.
Pitri.
Pitri.
To the forefathers.
To the forefathers.
Deva.
Deva.
To the demigods.
To the demigods.
Prataha.
Prataha.
His vow.
His vow.
Kuman.
Kuman.
The person.
The person.
Gatva.
Gatva.
Having gone.
Having gone.
Chandra rasam.
Chandra rasam.
To the moon.
To the moon.
Lokam.
Lokam.
Planet.
Planet.
Somapa.
Somapa.
Drinking summer juice.
Drinking summer juice.
Punaha.
Punaha.
Again.
Again.
Eshati.
Eshati.
Will return.
Will return.
Translation. Such materialistic persons attracted by sense gratification and devoted to the forefathers and demigods can be elevated to the moon. where they drink and extract of the soma plant. They again return to this plant. Srila Prabhupada reports, the moon is considered one of the planets of the heavenly kingdom. One can be promoted to this planet by executing different sacrifices recommended in the Vedic literature, such as pious activities and worshipping the demigods and forefathers with rigidity and vows. But one cannot remain there for a very long time. Life on the moon is said to last 10,000 years according to the calculation of the demigods. The demigods' time is calculated in such a way that one day, 12 hours, is equal to 6 months on this planet. It's not possible to reach the moon by any material vehicle like a Sputnik. But persons who are attracted by material enjoyment can go to the moon by pious activities. In spite of being promoted to the moon, however, one has to come back to this planet again, where the merits of his works in sacrifice are finished. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:21, Ketams Bhuktva Swargalokam. Visharam Shune Unye Marcha Lokam Vishanti. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Kutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Samaniti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaura Bhanta Charane Yivishesha Sunya Bhavi Paschana De Sitarane Om Agyana Timananda Shaganantana Shivakaya Chaksu Nilitam Jainam Tatsmai Sri Gurave Namaha So this is describing the entanglement in fruitive activities. When one speaks of this in the context of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, almost always it is talking about pious fruitive activities. Although there's one chapter in the Bhagavad Gita devoted to the demons who Shastavidhim Utsuja, they reject or throw away the injunctions of Shastra. There they go down. Well, this is now talking about people who satisfy their senses according to the regulations of Shastra. When spiritual life begins, when one becomes a transcendentalist, one has to give up this attachment to even the piety of the Shastras. There's a difference in these platforms between following a religion for some material benefit, either in this life or the next life, and following religious principles to transcend the material world, either for liberation or for love of God. These are two different platforms. And almost every religion has this distinction, even though sometimes it's not clearly spelled out or they're confused together. We here in Krishna consciousness, there's a very clear distinction made between the different places, the destinations of those who perform pious fruitive activities. That is to say, they go to the heavenly planets, where they enjoy nicely, as it says here, and then back to Marchaloka again, temporary heaven, and then come back down again. That's one place. Whereas the eternal kingdom of God is another place. That's the place where this coming back down is not programmed in. Otherwise, people don't make a very clear distinction. You make people who are following, I say, who are Christians, and you ask them what is their idea when you're saved by Jesus or whatever, what's it like? And they basically describe the Swarga Loka. You can meet some other Christians of a more serious spiritual bent, and they describe what's known in Christian literature as the beatific vision, having the continuous darshan of God. So that's another place. But these are not very clearly distinguished out here. So one has to come to this platform not only becoming free from sinful activities, but also pious activities, or fruitive activities in general. Then one is ready for a transcendental path. And this is what is really announced at the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, the first. The second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita starts giving us two things: knowledge of the difference between the self and the non-self, it's called Sankhya, and also how to act in such a way that this can be realized. Sankhya Yoga and then Buddhi Yoga. And to embark on this path of Buddhi Yoga, of self-realization, the one thing one has to be weaned away from is attachment to the flowery words of the Vedas. Because Krishna says, to be successful in this path, the path he is recommending, one has to have this particular quality called Vyavasa Atmika Buddhi. A great deal of fixed determination. Otherwise, he says, those who are attached to various material enjoyments, their intelligence, their buddhi is bahushaka, it has many branches. Whereas one who wants to be successful has a single-minded aim. This means that if one wants to be successful in the path of Krishna consciousness specifically, that has to be our only aim. So this is, you see, people who practice the kind of karma kanda religion, here Vedic sacrifices, but whatever the system may be, you'll notice, and this is conventional religion. Conventional religion means, okay, I have many things in my life like this, you know, and one of them is my religion over here. I have my economic well-being. This is one of my things, and then I have a little independence with that, but maybe advancement in my profession, discovering, making knowledge or something like that. So. And then maybe I have a hobby or two. I'm a devotee of collectibles of some kind or another, or Civil War reenactments, or whatever it may be. I'm really a fanatic for that particular thing. And And maybe I play a musical instrument, and I, so I've got a number of concerns. And then also on Sunday I go to church. So this is my religion. It's one thing among many. It's sort of like something added to my life, like a hobby. Like that. And that's conventional religion. Those people, at best, will go to the heavenly planets. If they're very, very strict, by the way. I have a god sister who told me that she asked Srila Prabhupada about her grandfather. Her grandfather was an extremely strict rabbi who followed all the commandments of Torah. 300 and some commandments, I forgot the number now. Followed strictly all the commandments of Torah in his life, which means almost everything you do is regulated, of course. So she asked Prabhupada, where did he go? And Prabhupada, she told me, Prabhupada said that if he followed, he went to the heavenly planets. So it's a strict business, wherever it is. But still, you will not go to the kingdom of God, because then your aim has to be one. So in Krishna consciousness, our aim has to be one. That does not mean we don't do other things. Naturally, the needs of the body are there, so there's maybe some economic development of some kind, family life, and so many things have to be there. But what it does mean is that anything else I do has to further the aim of Krishna consciousness. It has to be done in such a way that it adds to it. If it takes me away, it's another branch. Then I will fail. So this, there cannot be for us, anyone who is on this path, any separation between their religion and their life in the modern sense of the term. So this single-mindedness is required for this. So in the course of pointing this out, this vyavasaha buddhi, this fixed determination, is there. Krishna then turns to the Vedic sacrifices, such as the ones that are described here in this verse today. And he criticizes those people who are attached to the Pushpitam Vacham, the flowery language of the Vedas, and perform, they're called Veda Bhadarata, that means devoted to the Vedas. They're devoted to the Vedas, but their problem is they perform these elaborate sacrifices, but then and they want Bhoga and Aishwarya. They want opulence and enjoyment. And they say there's nothing more than this. This is that's what the Vedas teaches and nothing more. So they do not actually have, Krishna will go back to this point of sacrifice in the third chapter and in the fourth chapter. And the fourth chapter, which is called Transcendental Knowledge, if you look at it in context, what is that knowledge? It is knowledge of sacrifice. But these people have no knowledge of the meaning of sacrifice. So they say, there's nothing more than this. Just as Bhoga and Aishwarya, they're attached. This position is elaborated in the school called Karma Mamamsa. And there's six schools of Vedic thought, I guess, six sadarshan, six philosophies. And one of them is Karma Mamamsa. They're all called, scholars call them orthodox, they use the word orthodox. That is, they accept the authority of the Vedas, astika. They accept the authority of the Vedas. Even though this Karma Mamamsa philosophy, when it becomes completely elaborated, it becomes atheism. if those of us who are just read Krishna conscious literature, you will have encountered this philosophy when Krishna persuades Indra, persuades his father not to do the Indra Yajna. It's very funny, it's ironical that he's God himself persuading them not to worship Indra on the basis of a godless philosophy. But the Karma Mamsa philosophy, what it says, it comes down to these people are technicians of sacrifice. Vedic sacrifice is more like a modern scientific experiment. You have to do everything right with great precision. And it's materialistic too. The idea is to get material nature to produce results, material results. So like modern science is materialistic. But everything had to be done very precisely in the Vedic sacrifice. Every mantra had to be pronounced exactly right. There was one priest who just made sure there was no mistake. The time has to be correct. The place has to be correct. The sacrificial altar has to be laid out in a precise way. The procedure has to be exacting. One mistake, you start over again, or you get a different result. So like this is a culture of technique. And like anybody who masters technique, they think they know everything. So the Karma Mamsa began to think that by our sacrifice, and by the way, the sacrifice basically, in a way, what it does is in a microcosmic way, it reenacts the creation of the universe. So that if you know what you can do, you go in there and you alter things around so you get a result. But in the sacrifice, you recite the names. The mantras are mantras of the names of various demigods and also of Vishnu, the Yajna Purush. Those names are mentioned. So the Karma Mamsa philosopher said, yes, those names are mentioned, but actually we're not asking them for anything. They have to do it. Because the karma in this context means the sacrificial activities, regulated activities in the Vedas, and here specifically the sacrificial activity, that's what's all powerful. That's what brings the result. It's the karma. The activities that we, your technician priests, perform, that's what does it. So the gods, they have to obey. And then another development, they say, then the claim is the gods aren't involved at all. And as far as the names of the gods and the mantras, it says they're just names in the dative case. Nothing more. Just words in the dative case. Unto this, unto that, unto this. They just left it out altogether. But that's the further development of this. And this is specifically what Krishna has in mind here about these people. So he describes them that they have small knowledge. They have small knowledge of sacrifice. And then he says, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the vyavasa atmana buddhi, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord, does not take place. So therefore, these people are condemned to stay in the material world. Then, in the third chapter, when we're now talking about karma yoga, Krishna goes back to sacrifice and says, activities have to be done. Yajnanta, for the sake of yajna, or the yajna purush. And therefore, it describes yajna. You're performing it still for material activities, kama dukha. The sacrifice gives everything, like a wish-fulfilling cow. But still, Now, if you perform in the right way, and without being blocked by some false philosophy like this, gradually you start to understand, as he said, that the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. And he explains how the whole world is sustained by sacrifice. So that sacrifice has to be performed. It has to be performed. And if you perform it correctly, you'll come to this realization about the all-pervading transcendence. People there, as also described, karma, you perform this karma, means activities that are described in the Vedas. We sometimes call people who are fruitive workers karmis. That's usually a compliment, because actually they're vikarmis. They don't perform this. Then again, Krishna goes back again in the fifth chapter, and you should see how the first chapter and the second chapter at the sacrifices almost sounds like it's being rejected for Buddha Yoga, but then in the third chapter, Karma Yoga, one has to now, if you perform a sacrifice, when you become free from attachment to the results, you perform the sacrifice simply because it is prescribed duty. Then you'll gradually start to understand the meaning of sacrifice and begin to realize God. And then finally, when it comes up again in the fourth chapter, Transcendental Knowledge, then we find out when you get to text 24, there the Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Bhamavna Brahmanavutam Brahmayavatena Gantavya Brahmakarma Samadina. In the literal sense, this is describing a ritual, because it mentions offering arpanam, havi, butter, agni, fire, and so on. So the Vedic fire sacrifice is being mentioned. But it says that when a sacrifice is performed, everything becomes Brahman, becomes one in Brahman. Now, when Prabhupada translates this, he takes it to a slightly higher level of abstraction, because the text is actually concretely describing a fire sacrifice of some kind. But in the purport, Prabhupada defines yajna as activities performed for the sake of Vishnu. So this is a broader meaning of yajna, which is being taught in the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, Prabhupada says, when this verse gives the general principle of Krishna consciousness, a person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. And in the purport of this verse, which really should be read over and over and over again, Prabhupada describes sacrifice from Krishna consciousness as the process of re-spiritualizing matter. Because in a sacrifice, you're using dravya, material things, butter or whatever, or your senses or the sense objects. You're using material things. But these material things are spiritualized by sacrifice. And Prabhupada explains how everything that exists is situated in the Brahma Jyoti, Krishna's spiritual effulgence. But when the Jyoti is covered by illusion, Maya, or sense gratification. Synonymous terms, illusion, maya, and sense gratification. It is called material. This material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness, and thus the, now here we get another translation of the verse. The offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, the process of consumption, the contributor, and the results are all combined together, Brahman, or the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth covered by Maya is called matter. He repeats this. Matter dovetailed for the cause of the Absolute Truth regains its spiritual quality. That's what I mean by the re-spiritualization of matter. In other words, here's a so-called material thing. What is it? It's Krishna's energy. Now, why does this appear to me as the world of Maya in which I'm trapped and I can't get out? It's because I'm taking something that belongs to Krishna and using it for my sense gratification. Now it becomes matter. And the whole world, which is my playground for sense gratification, is now the material world in which I cannot get out, because any activity I do for sense gratification just gets me further in. I take the same object and I now engage in a Krishna service, which is called sacrifice. It regains its spiritual nature. And I also regain my spiritual nature, and the whole world regains its spiritual nature. And so now, this is how you actually see how everything is one in Brahman. And it's a question of perception. This takes place by sacrifice of activities in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman or the Supreme. Well, that's the method of Krishna consciousness. And then finally, and then in this verse, Krishna goes on to describe different kinds of sacrifices. Various austerities and everything in the Vedas taught as different kinds of sacrifice. And then he says that these different kinds of sacrifices are all approved in the Vedas, and you should understand them. And then he says, text 33, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. All sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. And then Prabhupada explains in the purport, the same sacrifice can be performed as karmakanda or jnanakanda, depending on your consciousness. And the next verse, which most devotees know, tattiddhi pranipattena paridarshanena sevayam. To know tat, what is tat here? Tat means that knowledge. What knowledge? The knowledge of sacrifice. To understand sacrifice, then what you should do, you should approach the tattva-darshana, the spiritual master who can enlighten you and guide you so you can understand this knowledge. So you can see how the idea of sacrifice, Krishna takes it, which is in the Vedas, destroys the misunderstandings and gradually shows how, if it's done right, it does not lead to this go up and down again, bouncing up and down. And Prabhupada says, like unintelligent children on a merry-go-round. But rather, it leads to transcendence. Okay, I have about 2 minutes. I guess now on my clock. Now, one question. Anyone? Yeah?
In the Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada explains how the first class devotee doesn't preach because he sees everybody thoroughly engaged in Krishna service and knows himself to be in Krishna service. Mm-hmm. Is that the way, in some ways, what you're describing, that how everything is once again engaged in Krishna service, it becomes
Yeah, it is described that in advanced devotee, the whole world is, becomes like Vaikuntha, and sees everybody. Prabhupada explains in one place, for example, that the instinct for self-preservation is really a perverted manifestation of love and God, of love of God, or just lust. What is lust? It's prema that's been curdled. So if you look on the deeper level, you see how much everybody loves Krishna. Right? I mean, they're overwhelmingly in love with Krishna. They don't know it. So for people who think like this, that everybody is a devotee, they aren't wrong. They're seeing on the deepest level of truth. But of course, they preach anyway, especially if they come under the direction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, we're bringing it in on time. Thank you very much.